Good evening, folks. You're very welcome along to the Big Red Bench on this Saturday evening. Rory and Lisa here with you until 7 o'clock. You join us on a day where Liverpool picked up their first top flight victory since the middle of October.
We haven't been playing at our best anyway this season. I think there's been a handful of occasions, if even that, that we've been really fluent. But for us, it was really about just retaining and getting the confidence back into the group. But we haven't been good enough in our performances.
We'll round up the day's Premier League action very, very shortly. We'll also talk to Valley Rovers after their disappointing defeat in the Munster Championship final today. Also going to look back on Munster's big win over Ulster last night.
I don't mean to sound sarcastic, but you would feel sorry for Holmes there that it comes down to a moment like that. You, as a player, you want to win the game, you know what I mean? Not kind of nearly rob it, and I think that's what we probably did in ways.
Reaction from Donica O'Callaghan to come an analysis from Donna Sullivan. Also tonight, going to talk Cork City Women's FC, going to talk to Lee Vale, and we're going to hear from Reb Lug all between now and 7 o'clock on the Big Red Bench. Hope this Saturday evening finds you well. If you want to get in touch, 0868 104 106, or you can tweet us as well at Big Red Bench. You feeling Christmassy yet?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
It was like the turning point yesterday, wasn't it?
It hit me yesterday, yeah. I was inside in town and I got a lovely Christmas feeling.
Oh, yeah. I was here 6 o'clock in the morning, and much to Fiona O'Donovan's horror, I put on Mariah Carey. I just felt like a little bit of injection of do-do-do-do.
I think it was a toy show last night as well. Kind of
set
me off.
Brilliant, yeah. And not we can't go without mentioning that little lady who's doing the martial arts on the toy show.
Oh man, that was crazy.
Yeah, we'll find a sporting angle in the toy show. We will. It was excellent. She was wicked.
What did she say she did again?
Extreme forms.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was deadly.
It was genuine. It was like something out of Matrix. I'd love to be able to. She was like, yeah, I've only been doing it 2 years. And I was going, what?
Yeah, she looks like she looked about 25. Like, I mean, somebody who's, yeah, unreal.
Yeah, massive juxtaposition then between her doing all that fancy kung fu moves, ninja stuff, and then playing with a doll 2 seconds later.
His hair was static, and that seemed to be it. Anyway.
Ed Sheeran stole the show last night, though.
He did. Can the man do any wrong? I don't think so.
No, in fairness, I was never a massive Ed Sheeran fan. I love his new song, though, and he was a hero, to be perfectly honest with it.
Yeah, he shaded Danny from the script that had been playing an empty Crow Park to the child that was gobsmacked to meet him. Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic stuff from Ed Sheeran. Right before we get too wrapped up in the toy show and spend the next 60 minutes talking with Ryan Turberty, Lisa's going to fill us up on today's sport.
Yeah, indeed. The Premier League action, the late kickoff underway since 5:30, and it remains scoreless at the Stadium of Light, where Sunderland are taking on Chelsea. Chelsea looking to open up a 9-point lead at the top of the table with victory there. A full roundup from today's earlier games coming up very shortly. Derby stay top of the Championship this evening despite going down 2-0 away to Leeds. Just a point behind them are Mick McCarthy's Ipswich, thanks to Noel Hunt's last minute winner on his debut away to Charlton today. Brentford's 4-0 thrashing of Wolves lifts them to third after Bournemouth were held to a 2-2 draw at home to Millwall. Middlesbrough and Blackburn drew one apiece at the Riverside to stay fifth and sixth respectively. Blackpool remain rooted to the bottom of the Championship table despite a 1-1 draw at Rotherham, and Brighton drop into the bottom three after they went down 2-1 at home to Fulham. Johnny McDonnell is the new manager of Drogheda United. McDonnell leaves Shelburne after a year and a half with the Dublin club and will be assisted at Hunky Dory's Park by former Republic of Ireland midfielder Mark Kinsella, while Owen Heary has raided his old club yet again. Owen Weirin, who worked under Heary at Bohemians last year, has joined him at Sligo. In Gaelic games, as Rory mentioned at the top of the show, Valley Rovers defeated in the Intermediate Munster Club football final today. Ardfert from Kerry came from behind to beat the Cork champions by 112 to 110. In rugby, we have live action in the Pro 12 where Leinster are hosting the Ospreys at the RDS. The Ospreys leading their 9-3. A win for the Ospreys there would see them again leapfrog Munster and move back to the top of the table. Connacht play host to the Scarlets at the Sports Ground this evening from 7:30. In today's Autumn Internationals, England beat Australia by 26-17 at Twickenham, helped by a brace of tries from Ben Morgan. Wales have their first win against Southern Hemisphere opposition since 2008, beating the Springboks 12-6 in a tight affair at the Millennium Stadium. Here locally then, in the Ulster Bank League, UCC beat NUIM Barnhall 38-27 in their Division 2A clash this afternoon. In snooker, David Morris has pulled off a big upset at the UK Championship. The Kilkenny man beat world number one and world champion Mark Selby by by 6-4. In golf, Rory McIlroy's challenge at the Australian Open came apart during his third round today, dropping 5 shots in just 2 holes on his way to a 5-over par round of 76. The world number one ended the day on 1-over par. That's 6 adrift of joint leaders Greg Chalmers and Brett Rumford. In cricket, Ireland beat New Zealand's A by 4 wickets and with 6 overs to spare in their one-day international in Dubai. And in racing, the 8-1 shot Manny Clouds took the Hennessy Gold Cup at Newbury today. The favourite Jack Adam could only muster an 8th place finish under Ruby Watch.
Cheers, Lise. We are going to kick off the show at Anfield, where Liverpool have gotten back to winning ways, but they left it late against Stoke. Shane Pinnington was there for us.
Liverpool 1, Stoke City 0. The home side finally get their first win of the month, courtesy of a goal 6 minutes from time from Glenn Johnson. Liverpool, though, looked to be on the rocks. In the 59th minute, Bojan's 18-yard drive hit the post as they survived an onslaught from the visitors. But that goal settled them down, and in the end, Stoke unlucky to get a point. Bojan with a volley late on, tipped over by Mignolet, and Walters header wide when he should have really scored. But Liverpool have the all-important 3 points. It's finished Liverpool 1, Stoke 0.
And what you need to win there for the Reds. 85th minute. That was when the goal went in, and Stoke bosses Mark Hughes.
We had good passage of play for long periods, and I think we were the team that looked most likely to get something out of the game. We switched off at the end.
That was the view of Mark Hughes. We heard from the Liverpool boss Brendan Rodgers at the top of the programme, massively relieved following today's win. Elsewhere today, 3 goals, 3 points. Another injury though for Manchester United, and it's a big one. Darren Stanage.
Manchester United 3, Hull 0. The Reds make it 3 out of 3 with a dominant performance despite losing Di Maria to injury. Goal line technology ruled Smalling's effort cross the line on 16. Hull failed to go over the corner and McGregor failed to keep it out. Rooney doubled the lead from outside the area after a knockdown from Van Persie, and the Reds ended the first half with 76% possession. Hull improved after the break with Jelovic going close, but Van Persie made it 3 as he rifled home on 66 before giving a standing ovation when he was replaced by Falcao. Manchester United 3, Hull 0.
Yeah, hamstring injury it looks like for Di Maria. He could be out of action for a couple of weeks. And United boss Louis van Gaal meanwhile reckons it was their best performance under him.
We have dominated, we have created many chances, and we don't give any chance away. Clean sheet again.
Elsewhere, the post-Roy Keane era at Aston Villa saw them go to Burnley to pick up a point. Paul Anthony.
Burnley 1, Aston Villa 1. It's now 9 games without a win for Aston Villa. That despite taking the lead through Joe Cole, who netted 5 minutes before the break, sliding into cover Andres Wiman's low cross. Before the goal, the visitors should have been streets ahead. Agbonlahor, Cole and Cleverley all missing opportunities. In the second half, the home team upped the tempo. They got a deserved equaliser from the penalty spot. 5 minutes from the end, Ings converted. And they almost claimed all 3 points when Ings hit the post in the 92nd minute. It finished Burnley 1, Aston Villa 1.
Villa boss Paul Lambert meanwhile reckons they should have gotten more from the game.
We should have been outside in the first half, to be honest. We have been charged in the first half, we should have put the game to bed, but the way we played for long spells that game were really good.
Elsewhere, a cracker at Loftus Road between QPR and Leicester. Nigel Bidmead.
Queen's Park Rangers 3, Leicester 2. Two evenly matched teams produced an entertaining game full of goal-mouth action. Esteban Cambiaso ended Leicester's goal drought with a precise early finish. A Wes Morgan own goal on 38 cancelled it out, and Rangers went into the break ahead following Leroy Fer's first goal for the club. Leicester equalised on 67. Jeffrey Sloop with a crisp drive, but Rangers won the game with a close-range header on 73 from Charlie Austin, his 7th of the season. Queen's Park Rangers 3, Leicester 2.
Elsewhere, Newcastle's good run ending today at Upton Park. Andrew Cheel.
West Ham United 1, Newcastle 0. Aaron Cresswell's first goal for the Hammers, and neat finish from Kouyaté through ball wins the game. It came early in the second half. Apart from that, there were hardly any chances to speak of. Newcastle's Sissoko was sent off late in the game for a second yellow, a needless shove on Andy Carroll. It came 60 seconds after Sissoko had been booked for kicking the ball away. West Ham had a chance to seal it, but Elliott in the Newcastle goal saved well from Zarate. It finished West Ham 1, Newcastle 0.
Magpies boss Alan Pardew says that red card was the deciding factor.
He's kicked the ball away. I think he was frustrated that the referee gave a foul. And then straight up the other end, he's involved with an incident with Andy, which actually didn't do him any justice either, because he's an honest boy and really and truly that's not him.
And in the early game today, Clive Edwards is at the Hawthorns to see Arsenal win.
A small group of Arsenal fans held up a banner at the end of the game against West Brom, suggesting it was time for their manager to leave. Arsene Wenger declined to comment on it after the game, but he looked upset, if not angry. His side had beaten West Brom by a headed goal scored in the 60th minute by Danny Welbeck. Arsenal deserved their win, though West Brom put them under pressure in the final moments of the game. Albion have now lost three successive league games. It finished West Brom 0, Arsenal 1.
I can't believe Arsenal fans are calling for Arsene Wenger to go. I mean, wouldn't I thought that was the general feeling amongst the Gunner support, considering all he's done. I mean, like, I know they're in sixth spot at the moment. They're 13 points off Chelsea as things stand. Chelsea scoreless with Sunderland after about 40 minutes. But I can't imagine that the Wenger out sentiment is prevalent amongst the majority of Arsenal fans. Maybe I'm mistaken. Let me know. Tweet me at Big Red Bench, or you can text us as well, 0868 104 106. Right, we're going to hear from Valley Rovers very, very shortly. They were beaten today by Ardfert in the Munster final. First, we're going to hear from Dennis Hurley of the Irish Examiner, who gave Lisa his analysis of the game.
It was kind of topsy-turvy, I suppose you'd describe it, Lisa. Valley started slowly enough, didn't score at all in the first, didn't get their first point in the 15th minute, and then they were down 3-1 and they got a point through Gary Farrell and then got a goal from John Costrell to go ahead, and they led then until, say, about the 45th minute or even after that probably when Ard Firth got a goal to equalise and then a point straight away to go ahead, and kind of after that Valleys were trying to chase and they just couldn't get back level again after that.
And to go a full quarter without scoring for the first quarter, was it nerves or was it a tactical error or what was it that was hard to get going?
No, I suppose they had a big blow after about 3 minutes. Kevin Canty got injured. He got a bad injury to his ankle and he tried to run it off and then they put him in full forward. But he wasn't able to get over it and he was taken off then after 10 minutes. So they had to rejig things. They pushed the equivalent out to midfield. And they brought in all many who actually got 2 points, but I suppose they just kind of upset the rhythm, like, because Kevin is such an important player for them that it just took a while for them to settle again. And then once they did, they were very good, but they only got 1 point in the last 20 minutes compared to 1-4 for Ardfert, which I suppose was the winning and losing of it. Ardfert was really kind of, once they got the goals come back level, they really, really took over. And Barry just found it that bit more difficult to kind of create scoring chances. I suppose they are, of course, with a lot of experience at this stage. Like, they've won All Ireland Junior and Intermediate titles before, and it has to count for a lot, I think.
Chasing this game for a finish, did Valley ever look like they could see it out, or was this Ardfert's game to finish and to win as worthy winners?
Yeah, they were. Ardfert did deserve it overall. You have to say they did, and especially with the way they finished. Valleys did have a couple of chances. They were down 111-110 with 5 minutes left. Aidan Walsh got a point to bring them back to within 1 point. And John Costrell and Faker Lynch both had chances. I suppose they were kind of long-range, speculative ones, and they both just kind of tailed off. They were unlucky. Like, had they gone over, they would have been brilliant points. But Ardfert just really were able to get men back and kind of force Valleys to have to shoot from distance rather than creating clear-cut chances. Like, they Ardfert were able to shut the game over well. Like, they brought an extra man back and it really kind of squeezed the life out of it in the last few minutes.
And, you know, with 4 points, the greatest margin they had at any stage, do you think there was anything left that Valley could have done to win this game? Or, you know,
I don't think so, to be fair. Like, when they went 4 points ahead in the first half, They were up 1-5 before after 29 minutes, and then Ardfert just got 3 points straight after each other to go back to with him in a point by half time. And then when Valleys did it again in the second half, John Costrell got 2 points in a row to make it 1-9-8. Straight away, Ardfert came back with a point, and the goal was shortly after that as well. Like, it was a very even game, and I think probably the fact that Valleys were ahead by four was probably an uneven reflection of the way things were going, that the 1 point difference was far closer reflection of that.
Tell me who stood out for you today on both sides, for Ardfert and for Valley Rovers?
Well, Ardfert had a couple of very good attackers. Their centre forward Damien Wallace got he was main centre forward, he played a full forward. He got 1-4, and then Shane Griffin and John Egan got 3 points each. Like, so once they were able to get the ball in, they were able to take their score as well, I suppose, for that of the game. Barry's running the breaks down the middle, but the score sorry weren't as easy to come by for them. But they had some good performances. Players like Jack Murphy worked really hard as wing forward. Like, you know, it was difficult for them to make headway, but they, you know, when they did manage it, they were impressive. John Cottrell got 1-3, and Owen Manning, like I said, came off the bench and got 2 points. No one played badly for Valleys. It was just that a few things just kind of went against them, and obviously losing Kevin Kenty was a huge thing. But overall, it was a great year for them. You know, they've only lost 2 matches, I think, in all competitions over the course of the year. And, you know, they'll certainly look ahead to senior football with a lot of optimism, I think.
Excellent stuff. Look, Dennis, thanks for your analysis this evening. Valley Rovers defeat in the Munster Club final, but as I said, left nothing behind them. Thanks for your analysis.
Cheers, Lisa.
That's Dennis Hurley of the Irish Examiner speaking to Lisa about the defeat of Valley Rovers by Ardfert of Kerry. Now, Valley Rovers boss is Ger Slynn. He also got a chance to speak to Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa. Yeah, it's a bitter pill to swallow, I suppose, Munster final to lose out. But we gave it our best shot. It wasn't good enough on the day. We lost our talisman, Kevin Kenty, within, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 minutes of the start of the game. And it obviously had a huge, from our point of view, a huge bearing on the result. But the lads that stepped up to the plate, and we did our best, and we were there with a shout for the last couple of minutes, and didn't take a couple of chances that we got to get ahead. And fair play to Ardfert, they have a lot of experience, they've been there before, and they worked through good scores to give them a bit of breathing space, and the final whistle just came a little bit too soon for us, you know.
And Ger, after that final whistle, is the overriding feeling one of regret and what could have been, or do you feel like you gave everything?
We gave everything, Lisa. The lads left nothing. They left it all on the field. There was, I think, it was maybe 5 subs we brought in again today. They all gave it everything. Have no regrets. We gave it our best shot. Maybe we could have just been a little bit more clever with the ball in the last maybe 10 minutes, but I won't take away from the lads' performance. We're bitterly disappointed, but fair play to Ardfert. They showed their experience and they ground it out. But I would feel that, you know, maybe it's the wrong thing to say, but I feel that if Kevin Kenty had been available for the match, it may have been a different story. But even at that, we still had chances to win it. But it just puts us, I suppose, in a position where if you can be a little bit objective, and that somebody said to us after the game, you're bitterly disappointed to lose a Munster final, so it must bode well for the coming year in senior football and Keller Shield, you know.
Exactly. You've had a very successful year, obviously, getting the county championship win, senior football to look forward to next year, and even the experience of these big games in Munster Championship will stand to you for the step up next year.
Yeah, absolutely, Lisa. The younger guys have to learn from this. They learn that defeat is a bitter pill to swallow, especially on a stage like a Munster final in the home of football in Killarney. And there's no question about it. That kind of experience you can't buy, and it will stand to the younger guys. And we'll build on that, please God, going forward. And it just shows the benchmark for Valley Rovers where they're at now, and in that they're bitterly disappointed to lose a Munster final. And we'll give it our best shot next year, and hopefully give a good account of ourselves and the Kelleher Shield, and hopefully make an impact in the senior championship.
Well, hard luck on today's result, Ger. Thanks for speaking to us throughout the year, and well done on what you have achieved in 2014.
Thank you very much, Lisa.
That's Ger Slynn there, Valley Rovers boss, speaking after their disappointing 2-point defeat by Ardfert of Kerry in the Munster final earlier on today. Half time at Stamford Bridge. It is scoreless between Sunderland and Chelsea. Chelsea certainly not having it all their own way. The tabletoppers being kind of frustrated by Sunderland at the moment. So scoreless there at the break. More Gaelic games to come on the show a little bit later on, as we hear from Moran Abbey ahead of their game against Thurman tomorrow. But now we're going to turn our attentions to Rugby and Munster have gone top of the Guinness Pro 12 table after holding out for a dramatic victory over Ulster last night at Thomond Park. Ian Humphreys had a last minute chance to win the game for Ulster, but the out half saw his conversion attempt slide wide of the posts as 14-man Munster held out for 21 points to 21. This is the assessment of head coach Anthony Foley after the game.
You view it in stages, to be honest with you. You know, I think the first 20 was all then. We've given away penalties that we knew the referee was going to be hot on, and that was very frustrating in itself. And then I think we executed a nice little play and we managed to get momentum into the game. And, you know, from there we took that right up to about into the 60th minute, or into the mid-60s. And we're 9 points up in perfect control of the game. And we opt to go for the post, hit the post, instead of staying in the corner and keeping pressure on Ulster. And they get out of there and go down the other end. We get a man put in the sin bin, they get 3 points, and suddenly now we're hanging on for dear life at the end. And, you know, it was down to a missed conversion that we won the game, which isn't the ideal way of winning the game, but, you know, you take it and you run away and you have a little smile on your face. And but you understand as well that some of the stuff we did out there was good, but some of the stuff out there, if we go into Claremont with that, we'll get it handed back to us.
That's Anthony Foley there speaking after the game. Captain last night, Dunico Callaghan, said it was a good win, but their celebration was muted.
You know, we didn't perform well tonight, but we got a result, and there's an awful lot to be said for that too. Some days just, and you hate celebrating when it comes down to someone's mistake as opposed to you actually grabbing the game and winning it. And I don't mean to sound sarcastic, but you would feel sorry for Holmes there that it comes down to a moment like that. You, as a player, you want to win the game, you know what I mean, not kind of nearly rob it. And I think that's what we probably did in ways. I think it'll be up another step, you know, next week. So I think that's the exact kind of hit out you want. Lads are sore in there, you know. You look at guys, it was a real tough game, and that's what you want going into it. Yeah, it was poor out of us. They hit their straps, and then I think we've kind of played a bit more one out and kind of got into a bit of game, and then kind of sat back. Yeah, it's definitely something we'd have to look at, the kind of slow start. And I thought we were going to come out of, you know, out of the blocks firing, but we didn't, and that's disappointing from us. Yeah, it was kind of, especially at home and home, and you just want to get off to a right start. But to be fair, it was kind of the 3-6-9 and start putting you under pressure when they're playing all the right parts of the pitch and they're a quality team.
And that's Dunico Callaghan speaking after last night's win over Ulster. For more on the game, Lisa's been speaking to Donna Sullivan of the Limerick Post and about a game that started slow for Munster, ending with high drama, and it certainly had it all.
Oh, didn't it just? Yeah, I suppose the first 20 minutes all Ulster, middle 40 all Munster, last couple Ulster was incredible. And I suppose the Munster players and management afterwards were talking about how they hated to see Ian Humphreys miss that kick, and they felt that they almost, you know, stole the game, which, you know, it didn't look like at one point when they were very comfortable.
And did Ulster, what does it come down to? Did Ulster implode, or did Munster adapt to the game, or what? Where did things change?
It was an interesting one. I suppose everyone was kind of scratching their heads after the game trying to figure that out. I think Ulster, in the first, obviously when they went 12-0 up, they were applying a lot of pressure at the ruck time, and then maybe a few calls from the referee put them into difficult positions. Munster capitalised on that, held on to the ball for a huge amount of time. I suppose when you don't have the ball, it's very hard obviously to score. So Ulster were struggling when Munster held on to the ball, which is a trait of Anthony Foley's sides. So I suppose Munster kind of strangled the game, and then Munster went away from that and allowed Ulster back in. It was just one of those games. It was ebb and flow.
Indeed. Couple of, you know, Munster looked very threatening when they were on the attack, and Jared Vandenhever and Duncan Williams too. We saw Ronan O'Mahony with that line break. They were impressive when they were on the attack though.
Hugely impressive, yeah. It's a huge bonus actually to watch lads like that when you think that Andrew Conway and Simon Zeba have been on the wings for the Champions Cup games. You look at Gerhard van der Heever and obviously Ron O'Mahony last night, and as you mentioned, the best performance for me was the performance of Duncan Williams at 9. I thought he was outstanding, did brilliantly to get his try in the corner, a little snipe, and it was just, look, one of those games really, I suppose, where the lads stood up, because, you know, back to back against Claremont next 2 weekends, they want to have a red shirt on.
That's one of the biggest positives out of it, I think. Obviously Munster going top of the table now, it's kind of a Pro 12 job done there, but the week out from the Champions Cup done, it's so good to see so many lads playing so well. And Foley's going to have a lot of selection headaches, or will he?
Oh, he absolutely will. That's a key thing. Any team that wins anything in any sport really has competition for places, and that's what Munster have now on the wing. And look, you know, the Heineken Cup squad, it's an extended one. You know, lads know that they're in or out at this stage. But then you get down to the nitty-gritty. JJ Hanrahan's played at 15 last two games. Toddy did very well. Felix Jones has to come back in there. We spoke about the wingers. Don't even get started on the back row in terms of who can go in there once Peter O'Mahony arrives back in town. Paul O'Connell in the second row. Dave Foley capped for Ireland. And Donoghue Callaghan capped in the side last night. So it looked, that's just two or three positions I've named there where there's absolute white-hot competition, and that's brilliant going into a back-to-back against Claremont. And luckily, the home game is here. Win that. Claremont have lost twice. And you can go over to France confident you might get another win.
And Foley has talked consistently about looking to improve week on week, and we're hearing it more and more from the players now every week in the press conferences. What's the focus this week, do you think, John, to improve for next week?
I think Anthony Foley just spoke about it, holding onto the ball a lot more. You know, it's going to be even more difficult against Claremont. You know, Ulster, no offence to them, and at the same level as Claremont are going to be next week. He just said, Anthony Foley said, hold onto the ball, play in the right areas. You know, he speaks a lot about kicking the ball in their own half and just concentrating them. When you get the chance, you take them. You know, use the boot when you have to for penalties. But the main thing to remember from Anthony Foley's point of view is that next week is such a jump in class, and those Irish players jumping back down haven't played any game time with Munster since the Autumn Series started. So that's going to be difficult. But for him, he just said, continuity, hold on to the ball and play smart rugby when you get the chance.
Is that a big concern, and is it something Anthony's going to have to consider when it comes to his team selection, blending the lads that have been there and playing together and getting the international lads back in? Because obviously he wants that international strength and experience for the big games.
Absolutely, yeah. Sometimes you kind of, you'll be worried about the internationals coming back in. Will they be able to lift up the standards of what have been there? The standards that have been there have been excellent. Those internationals coming back are going to make a huge difference. And I suppose, look, the fact that they're internationals means they'll quickly pick up on any changes that have been made while they were away, and they'll slot seamlessly back into that squad for next week. And the fact that they've been playing at an even higher level than what Claremont are going to bring is only another big advantage.
Bit like last night, John, Munster were slow to get going with this season, but they're in good shape now ahead of this back-to-back, aren't they?
Oh, very much so. I suppose if you tell Anthony Foley after his first two games in charge that he'd be top of the table heading into Heineken Cup back-to-back, and also still in the hunt in Europe, he would have taken it. Look, it's just, it was always going to take time. We all remember Joe Schmidt when he took over at Leinster. People wanted to get rid of him after six games. But Anthony Foley is stuck with it, stuck with the patterns that he wants to play. Aggressive rugby, smart rugby, and they're doing well.
John, a pleasure speaking to you this evening, and enjoy the match next week.
Cheers, anytime, Lisa.
That's Donal Sullivan there of the Limerick Post. The Ospreys, though, could go back atop of the Pro 12 at the expense of Munster if they win against Leinster today.
Yeah, it looks like they had crossed for a try, but it's been ruled out for a forward pass, so that's good news for Munster, but they do lead Leinster.
Right, halftime at the Stadium of Light. No goals, Al Ross has seen it.
Sunderland Post and Chelsea Crossbar have both been struck in a first half that's been high on work rate but low on quality. Diego Costa and Eden Hazard have both thrown themselves to the ground in the Sunderland box looking for a penalty, and the clearly frustrated Costa then reacted angrily to a John O'Shea challenge on the halfway line, but all without a single booking. Sunderland's assistant Mauricio Tirico, though, has been sent off. A tetchy half, Sunderland 0, Chelsea 0.
Right, still to come on the show, we're going to talk to Moran Abbey as they make their journey to Galway tomorrow for the All-Ireland Senior Club Final against Thurman of Donegal. Also going to hear from Vanessa Ogbonna of Cork City Women's FC. We're going to talk to Lee Vale as they were named Club of the Year. And we're going to talk Rebel Ogue as well, all between now and 7 on the Bench.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
with Kiri's Hyundai. Believe everything you hear. Kiri's of Cork, Mallow and Middleton. Kiri's.ie.
Ryan Lisa here with you until 7 o'clock. We're going to turn our attentions to ladies football, and the Moran Abbey ladies have made their journey to Galway today for tomorrow's All-Ireland Senior Club Final against Thurman of Donegal. Lisa's previewed the game with their coach Shane Roynan and begins by asking him how their focus has adapted for the biggest game of the year.
It hasn't really changed. Look, we tried to work on a few things that we didn't get right in the semi-final, just to start our own game out. We haven't really concentrated on Thurman, what we need to do for Thurman. We're just going to start out our own few problems that we had, trying to get back to the way we were doing things maybe in the previous games, and they were the issues we addressed the training, and hopefully we've sorted them out.
And what sort of things were they, Shane?
I would just felt that maybe the last thing in Sarsfield we committed a lot of fouls, you know, 26 fouls we committed, and that, which is our highest total of the year, and something we would have worked on, you know, during the summer to cut down the number of fouls we're giving away. So we've talked about our discipline and our tackling, and you know, some of the fouls were, you know, probably, you know, they were harsh calls maybe, so I wouldn't be too critical of the girls for those. But there was other ones there that were, we felt were a bit lazy, and, you know, they went back to things they were doing before. So we spent a good bit of time now in the last few training sessions going back to our tackling drills and being very harsh on each other on the discipline side of things, and you know, maybe our passing as well coming out of defence was a bit shaky the last day, which wasn't going on earlier in the year. We were probably much more sure coming out with the ball, so we worked on a couple of drills, tried a couple of new things, and you know, hopefully those things have been sorted out.
But passing and discipline, things like that, can come down to tiredness on a match day, and is there a fatigue factor there? Can you see it, or are you worried about it?
I suppose the biggest factor I would have thought with some of the things that were going on with me was a bit of pressure.
Okay.
From playing at home. You know, the girls knew there was a big crowd there in Mourne Abbey, and you know, while that was great, they also felt they had to perform in front of them. And I think some of the passes they made were uncharacteristic, and you know, some of the fouls we committed were uncharacteristic as well compared to what we were doing. So I think they actually put a lot of pressure on themselves. You know, we weren't putting pressure on them, and you know, there wasn't pressure coming off from people outside the club or you know, or support or anything like that. But I think the girls were they just expected a lot of themselves, and maybe they just panicked a bit, you know, and that's something we've spoke about and tried to sort out. And you know, I think they're a little bit more relaxed coming into this game. You know, and they're not taking any for granted, but you know, the pressure's off. They're in Northern Ireland final. You know, if you go out and play it, and if you do, you know, you do your best. If you don't win it, then there's nothing we can do about it. But I think the pressure's kind of off them. You know, they've settled down, I think, there in the last 10 days.
Good. The club has the distinction, Shane, of county or All Ireland success at junior and intermediate level before that intermediate success now 7 years ago. Is there many girls involved that were involved in that team?
I think there's eight that would be involved and could be involved for all three or something like that.
Oh, right.
But like, to be honest, you know, I know it's probably everybody talks about when you're involved in the team that you don't be talking about records and things like that.
Yeah.
Like the players and myself and Dominic haven't mentioned that at all. You know, it hasn't become an issue at all, like, you know, and it's something that, look, it's there in the background. And if Sunday night the girls get to take a photograph and they've won all eight of them have won all three, then that's great. But you know, that was a good long time ago. There's a lot of new players in the team, and you know, some of the girls were very young at that stage as well. So you know, I think it's something, it's there, it's in their history, they have it, but it's something that we haven't spoken about at all.
You'll talk about history when you make it, says you. And Shane, like, my favourite thing about club championship, like competing at the highest level, it's the people around you that you've grown up with, and family and friends, and that's a distinct factor in this team. The amount of families involved, I believe you've, is it up to five sets of sisters?
There's five sets of sisters, yeah. You know, so it really is a tight-knit bunch, you know, and they've grown up together. They've, you know, all the girls aren't from Mourne Abbey. There's a couple of girls from Killavullen and Ballyclaw and places like that, but they've all played underage football in Mourne Abbey, and you know, they've grown up together. They've gone to school together. They won All-Ireland in the school together, a lot of the girls, back in St Mary's and Mallow, you know. So it's a really close-knit group, and you know, the fact that there's just so much family involvement, you know, it makes it very special, I'd say, for the girls, you know, there on Sunday. And if they win, it'll be great to have won it with so many family members on the field, and you know, so many of their friends that they've grown up with. That's kind of makes the club championship very special. It's the people you grow up with and the people you know they're living with those people all their lives, and so it's a very special time.
Tell me, how much do you know, how much work have yourself and Dominic and the management team there done or know about Termin?
Look, we've done as much as possible, I suppose. You know, we didn't have someone at the semi-final. We didn't want to be thinking that much ahead, and it would have been very, you know, asking someone to go up to see the game would have been pretty awkward. And the video, it wasn't videoed. And so we've seen the Ulster final, all right. And, you know, they were very, very good that day against Dunamine. And by all reports from people who are at the game that we've spoke to, they were excellent again in the semi-final and beat a very, very good Galway team. So, you know, it's going to take a huge effort on Sunday to beat them. They're very physical, they're strong, they're fit. They play a traditional style football, and I think that, you know, we will have our hands full, especially with Charlie McLaughlin up front, and they're a very accurate free taker. You know, Marion O'Donnell, she doesn't miss anything. She got 7 frees the last day, scored them all. Like, so so again, that would have been something we heard about. So we have to make sure our discipline is right on Sunday.
Now we've spoken quite a bit lately, Shane, between, you know, going from match to match and the quick turnarounds, and it's been an unbelievable journey for Mourne Abbey so far, and literally a journey when you consider you went to London for the quarterfinal, then you were back home, was all right for the semi-final, but the long trip to Tuam now, starting on Saturday for Sunday's match at 2 o'clock. How are you feeling going on the journey? Are you confident?
I suppose we're as confident as we can be. We're confident in our own ability. We're not being cocky about ourselves. You know, we've great belief in the group, and the girls have great belief in themselves, and I suppose that gives us confidence going forward to, you know, to perform the way the best we can do. And if that's good enough on Sunday, that's great. If it's not, and the girls put everything in, then we can't have asked any more of them. And there is confidence there, and the way they've played, they must have great belief in themselves. And, you know, we keep telling them that because they've achieved a lot this year. You know, no matter what happens Sunday, they've had a wonderful year. And, you know, if we can cap it off Sunday with a win, then it'll be just been an incredible year altogether.
Indeed, Shane, I look forward to speaking to you on Sunday evening, and hopefully about the right result. The very best to luck to you, and enjoy it.
Thanks very much, Lisa.
Shane O'Neill there of the Mourne Abbey ladies team as they take on Tyrone tomorrow in the All-Ireland final. Best of luck indeed to them. A massive game for them tomorrow, Lisa. So fingers crossed they can bring it back to Cork.
Yeah, every game as it goes, talking to Shane, you'd just be hoping they can do it. And they've delivered so far. So yeah, the best of luck to them. It's making the journey today, trying to take the pressure off tomorrow. They've no new injury concerns or anything like that. So they're in good stead, hopefully. And the best of luck to them.
I was getting Tyrone mixed up with the fantastically named Tyrone Feckin.
Yeah, you don't get to say that.
No.
That's in Louth.
Close enough. Right, the Lord Mayor's Cup got underway last night. The Lord Mayor's Cup is a schools competition where they've combined these city schools up together in several groups. So like three or four schools are combined together to make one team. They play several other schools as well. It's a project spearheaded by Teddy McCarthy and Tomás Mulcahy. It's kind of to promote hurling in city schools, or maybe it hasn't been as strong as it has been or should be. You were down at one of the games last night. You were impressed?
Yeah, I headed down to see for the first match there, and it was very impressed. It was played in the vein that it's intended to be played in Rory, because you could see that the young lads were playing to these new adapted rules that they have, like, for example, that looking for the ground strike in front of goal for the goal
points,
that
yeah.
might be worth a bit more. With the pressure off, I think young lads were also finding each other for some interesting passes, and, you know, playing the game with a little bit of flair and trying to show off their skill, I suppose. Mm. So it was good to see. I was definitely impressed with some of the action. There's a couple of one-on-one penalties, I'm told, as well, across all different games, all four games. Good. Some scored, some saved, some went wide, I'm told. So, yeah, we have the results, and I might just run through them as regards the different groups. Two groups, of course, and as you said, 24 schools competing for the four team, or for the eight teams. So four matches last night in Group 1. The amalgamation of Prez, Colosh, the David and Douglas Community School, they beat St Aidan's, Carriganvar and Terence McSweeney's, and that finished 4-13 to 3-11. The other game in Group 1 saw Squelmurrog on Small Blarney, Colosh, Sequilm and Ballincollig Community School come together to beat Carrigaline Community School, Crosshaven and Kinsale Amalgamation. That finished 4-9 to 15 points. In Group 2 then, there was Milton, Passage and Nagel playing together. That selection, they beat Colosh on Spridnave, Creashery, Deer Park, Bishopstown Community School, and that finished 4-19 to 1-20. And there was a very high scoring one then in the second game in Group 2. Colosh on Fearshig, Glanmore Community School finished 6-23 against Christians, North Mon, Mayfield, and they're 4-6. So as you can even see in the score lines, they're very high scoring games because of the added scores and everything.
I've seen my former school, Colosh, David, in there as well. Would love to be involved in a competition like this. When I was back in school, we never really had the numbers or the players, I suppose, to put out a full hurling team. So the competition for schools like Colosh, David, is absolutely fantastic, and we'll be covering it over the next few weeks. And the final is just before Christmas as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's played under lights on Friday nights, which, like, there was a great crowd down at CIT last night, which was great to see, and lots of encouragement and plenty of people involved in the backroom teams, it would seem. Lots of interchange with the different subs. So, yeah, I really like competitions like this, because anything that's done to promote for young hurlers. It's great.
Fantastic. Right. Still scores between Sunderland and Chelsea. 56 minutes on the clock. Diego Costa's just been booked for Chelsea. Possibly should have been sent off. He was fouled by John O'Shane and kicked out at him. Should have seen red, but he got away with it. He looks like he's going to get a red card the way he's going. He looks a bit wound up, so he needs to calm down a little bit, take a deep breath, and hopefully score a couple of goals because he's my fancy football captain.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, no, as far as that foul on John O'Shane, it was ridiculous. Yeah. He got kicked out and he should have been sent off. Sorry, Rory.
Right. Cork City Women's FC picked up a big point in the Women's National League last week with a 2-2 draw against Piemont. Vanessa Ogbonna scoring the equaliser for that draw. Her first goal since signing for the club. She joined us in studio earlier on today, and I began by thanking her for the fantastic biscuits she arrived in with team for Team Bench.
No bother.
That was the most important part. That was impressive. You can come back anytime now after that. Vanessa, tell us, how did you end up at Cork City Women's FC?
After my leaving cert, I got accepted into UCC. So then I knew that, like, being in Cork, it was far away from home, so I couldn't be playing with any team outside Cork. Like, so I knew Ciara McNamara, like, from Gaynor Cup and stuff. Mm. So I was talking to her because I'd watched them play Wexford Youths like the week before I moved up. So then I just got introduced to Charlie Lynch and all of them then.
And what did Charlie say to bring you on board?
He was just letting me know how the team was getting on, and I was more excited to be playing in the Women's National League in the first place. So I came down to a few training sessions, like, and it seemed fun, like, and I liked the atmosphere, so decided to stay.
Tell us a little bit about your background then and your football career down in Waterford.
I used to play with Tramore FC since I was about 7 or 8, and I know we were very successful there the last few years. But it was run by Peter Jacob and Chris and Decky Howlett down there, and we were really close, like, and I think we were getting on well, and we were in the Wexford League and we'd won it a few times, like, made a few rivals, but sure, that's soccer. But I think everyone else then, as everyone was getting older, people were moving to college, people were moving abroad, like, so everyone was working, had their own individual, like, responsibilities, and, like, just we were lacking players then the last year or two, so then it kind of went downhill. Mm-hmm. I think, but other than that, it's been really good.
And a good start now not a good start, but last weekend marked a start for you in terms of getting your goal scoring record underway for Cork City.
Yeah, I was really excited. I was after a match, I was just really happy, like, all day. I felt like a little child because it was like a new league and I hadn't scored for so long, like, and it was good to get a goal down and get the point up, and, like, we have a match against Galway there tomorrow, so we're hopeful to get another result out of it. Like,
talk us through the goal, actually.
I can't remember. I thought it was completely different compared to what I saw on the screen. But I think it was Angie played a long ball and it beat their defender, and their goalkeeper came out to it and the defender was trying to get back to it. But I got in there quickly and just kind of got in the back of the net, I guess.
Good to break the duck then as well, and just hopefully the goals will start flowing now.
Yeah, hopefully. It was really exciting.
And is it fair to say it marked a big result for Cork City Women, coming from behind twice, I think, during the match to get the draw? And, you know, it was a big win against Piemont, a mid-table side.
It really shows our improvement, I think, because the last few games we've been, since the first time we played Piemont, since then we've been improving all the time, but we never really got much on the board. But now it's another point we've gotten in the league. It's much better than last year, so all we can do is build from there, like.
Yeah, I spoke to Charlie a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, that's what it's all about at this stage in the season anyway, seeing progress from game to game. And have you seen it?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people just expect a big jump from there, but I don't think that's not realistic at all, and most likely won't happen. So I think just little steps, just putting teams under pressure, just getting less goals in the match, I think it really boosts our confidence every single game we're playing, like.
And for you, I suppose, after scoring last weekend, you'll go to Galway tomorrow with that extra confidence, you know, having got the first goal in the bag, and hopefully build on that.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. What other aims would you have for Cork City this year at a personal level and as a team?
I don't know, really, but the main one is finishing higher than we did last year. I think that's the first step anyway, just winning more matches, even drawing some, just losing less, basically, just, and just building on to next year. I think next year is where the difference will definitely be seen, and the work will be seen, because it's hard to show teams all the work you're doing when they're all those teams have been building up the last few years and Cork is only starting up again. Like, so I think just to have a bit of patience with ourselves and like know that it's coming.
You know, for that's important, patience, I suppose, with your side, and you're looking at the bigger picture. You're not trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel overnight here.
Definitely. I think it's definitely not realistic to think that, okay, yeah, we'll be optimistic, let's go win the league. Definitely, we go and we try to win every game.
Yeah.
Every game's just as important as each other, and we just go optimistic to each game, do our best there, and then if it works, it works. If it doesn't, we try again next time, and that's all. Just keep hopeful, I think, is the best part of it, yeah.
How's the support when you're playing at home?
It's great, but it's weird for me because I don't know anyone in Cork.
Yeah.
So all these people are shouting names and I'm just like, oh, hi. And like the first match I played in Dublin, I was talking to some woman from the Pemount side, but I thought she was from Cork because I just didn't know any different. Like, I think everyone else, it's grand for everyone else, but I think it's very different personally because I'm gone from playing at home or even playing away when I know so many people watching me. But I'm just coming, I'm just playing soccer in front of a few random people. But like my old coach Peter Jacob came to watch me last week, so it was really special that I scored in front of him. Like, so
that's really nice, and I'm sure you have an awful lot of new number one fans after scoring the goals.
Hopefully.
So. Vanessa, thanks a million for coming in. Best luck against Galway tomorrow.
Thank you.
Best luck for the entire season ahead, and we'll hope that your goal scoring continues for you. Enjoy it.
Thank you.
That's Vanessa Ogbonna there of Cork City Women's FC, who called in for a chat. Really nice lady who brought us in biscuits.
Oh,
so she's an extra nice lady.
Yeah, I know, she's always a winner. I've been overindulging today. Thank you, Vanessa.
Right, we're going to talk athletics now on the Big Red Bench. Before that, still scores between Sunderland and Chelsea after 62 minutes. Cork's Leavelle Athletics Club was named Club of the Year for a second consecutive year this week by Athletics Ireland. Leavelle claimed the honours for their achievements throughout 2014, including the most podium finishes at the National Senior Championships. Lisa's been speaking to President Finbar O'Brien about the club's strengths, but first here's Chairman Donal Murnane on the club's distinction when it comes to Olympic representation, which stretches well back through the years.
Back as far as 1972 in the Munich Olympics, where Donny Walsh was our first athlete to compete in the marathon there, and the tradition has carried on since, with Marcus O'Sullivan competed in four Olympics, Mark Carroll, Dervil O'Rourke. We also had Donald McCarthy compete in Sydney, and Kieran Lennard most recently.
Yeah, it's a fantastic return for a club. It's, you know, anywhere in the country, but it's great.
It's about two things. It's about coaching structures and also setting expectations. Leavelle is always looking at bringing kids in and bringing them through the system, and when the kids come in the door, you never know who's going to be the athlete, and it's working with them through the years, developing their skills, developing their techniques, building their confidence, and then they work their way up from county championships to Munster championships, then competing at national level, and going on from national level to compete at European level, and ultimately compete on the world stage. And there's always talent that we can bring through, and it's just a matter of identifying that talent and working with the talent and bringing it through.
I get the impression from speaking to you both here, Donald, that while there's massive respect for your athletes and the achievements that they've made, there's massive respect there for the work that the coaches are doing, because without them, obviously, at the end of the day, the athletes would only get so far.
Athletics is an incredible technical sport, and the knowledge that's needed to coach an athlete is huge. And we're very lucky to have coaches who have been athletes themselves for the most part, and are now back reinvesting into the young athletes, and they're bringing their knowledge, their expertise with them, and transferring it to the athletes.
And Finbar, like we said, you've been involved for a long time. You've, I'm sure, seen the club go through a great journey, or what would you consider your challenge at the moment to continue achieving the best?
Undoubtedly the challenge is to match the past.
That's a great challenge to have.
The people nowadays, they're standing on the shoulders of giants, really. It was all done before. No, the only thing we really are short of is an Olympic medal. When you think of, Donald mentioned people, officials, we have lost three outstanding officials in the last 3 years. Just last year, Liam Horgan, or the chairman before Donald, prematurely died, and Liam was an incredible chairman for 10 years. He modernised us and brought us into the modern era. It is all modern technology now. When I go to a meeting, I'm out of my depth because they work on their iPhones and their laptops and all the rest. And the chairman makes a decision, or whatever decision is made, he says, Mick, you look after that. And he does it, and it's done. He said, that's all right, that's done. And that's how you succeed. And bringing new people in as officials, we have rotated quite a lot of people, and that's important, I think, that we have this ability to have young people coming in and taking over, not to have somebody be there for 20 years and get blasé about it. Joe Flynn, for instance, was an outstanding official for us, and we lost Joe and John Smith in the last few years. There were three major officials, not alone for us in the club and Cork. Nationally, they were recognised as outstanding officials. But now we have people like Donald here and there. We know he said he was only 1 year, but he has fitted in there, and he's following the tradition that was set before him. And I'm confident that this tradition will continue, and that I can see Athlone come back to help. And that's a wonderful thing. They start off with the young people and help them. And there's no substitute for knowledge of the sport that you're doing, whatever it is, hurling, rugby, football or whatever. And the tradition carries on. And people come along and you'll find out when you ask about them, they might have been 10 years running. And they would know, they would have a vast amount of knowledge. And they fit in straight away. And it's getting these people to come back into the club and give something back. That's the key to success and continued success.
You know, a lot of the time you'd ask sports people about challenges, but that's a great challenge to have, Donal, to build on the shoulders of greatness for a club. I mean, Leavale sets high standards, has achieved an awful lot, and looks to always improve on that.
Yeah, he's definitely putting it up to me for sure, right? but we're very confident. You know, we've got great structures in place, and we're currently working on new programs where we want to develop our own performance centre, have a high excellence performance centre specifically for athletics here in Cork. We're very grateful for both UCC and CIT, who have fantastic facilities, and we use those facilities on a regular basis during the week. But there is a need for us to have our own place as well, where we can do specific athletic training in an indoor environment with our athletes, so we can bring them to another level.
Excellent. Look, gentlemen, congratulations again on winning Club of the Year. Like I said at the outset, it was just confirming nationally what we all know locally is in terms of Leavale's contribution here locally, athletics-wise. Thank you very much for joining us in studio today to talk about the award and
thank
the club.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman Donal Murnane and President Finbar O'Brien of Leavale ASC named Club of the Year for a second consecutive year this week by Athletics Ireland. Still scores between Sunderland and Chelsea as the clock ticks slowly towards 17 minutes. Fully expect Chelsea to get a late goal here. They haven't played well, but it's been the story of Chelsea season that they haven't played well and just gotten goals.
Yeah, it's great stuff, and just a bonus for Munster as well. In Leinster are leading the Ospreys 15-12, which would see Munster stay top of the table.
Excellent. Extended version of that interview with the Leavale Athletics Club is on our website now. Go to redfm.ie/sport. We're back tomorrow from 6. We have a cracking interview on tomorrow evening's show as we speak to the Cork International Rules stars Cullum O'Neill and Aidan Walsh. Very interesting chat with them. So be sure and tune in tomorrow from 6 p.m. for that. John Terry just took a tumble in the box looking for a penalty. Wasn't given. Looks like it could have been a penalty there, but or it was a free out, I should say. But Chelsea certainly not having it their own way. Sunderland nil, Chelsea nil, 70 minutes on the clock. That is it for us tonight. Thank you very much for tuning our way. Follow us on Twitter at Big Red Bench. Stevie's up next with the Block Party. We're back tomorrow at 6.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie.
With Kerry's Hyundai, believe everything you hear. Kerry's of Cork, Mallow and Middleton. Kerry's.ie.
Red FM.